housewarming. Well, I thought to speak something this evening about Rupa Goswami's teaching. Anybody here that's new and doesn't know who is Rupa Goswami would need an introduction. You all know. Yes? Okay. Amongst Lord Chaitanya's primary associates, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan were especially important, and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan were especially prominent, and amongst them, the six, were Rupa and Sanatan. And although Sanatan was the elder brother of Rupa Goswami, and therefore culturally and etiquette-wise, the younger brother looked to the elder brother as guru, and he maintained that disposition throughout his life. At the same time, Rupa Goswami was very special amongst all of Lord Chaitanya's associates and is considered the principal next acharya following Lord Chaitanya for a number of reasons. But he was especially empowered to teach the science of bhakti, because it's through devotional service, through bhakti, Krishna can be understood. And by understanding Krishna, chaktva deha punarjanma na, the cycle of birth and death is broken. Mameti, you go to Krishna. So that very, very important subject matter to understand bhakti properly. And there are a number of very well-known verses. I'm going to especially refer to one of those well-known verses that describes the bhakti principle. And we'll do this. It has to do with our housewarming and Sanjaya's kirtan and a life of devotion. A good definite bhakti there's misunderstandings of what bhakti is, and there's partial understandings of what bhakti is, and there's complete understandings of what bhakti is. The principle of bhakti is not exclusive to the Hare Krishna people. Just hearing this morning Prabhupada speaking, recording of Prabhupada speaking, that Christ was a pure devotee, Muhammad was a pure devotee, representatives of Krishna are pure devotees. It was an initiation ceremony in Los Angeles, and he was describing the bhakti principle, and one that the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name is to not have proper regard or to blaspheme devotees of the Lord. And so he was speaking of Christ and Muhammad in that context. And they should never be disrespected. There's not an intention, say it negatively, there's no intention in the bhakti principle to say us and them, we're better and others. So, but the bhakti principle is pure. And so there's impure, there's mixed, and there's pure. So it's good to know what is pure. So one of the ways that he does that is it's a teaching methodology that you say what something isn't and then you say what something is. So you're really clear what that something is. It is a good definition is exclusive and inclusive. So there's two verses together. What bhakti isn't, and what is renouncing things this is impersonalism, renouncing things that are from Krishna, and you give them up. Hari sambandha vastuna mamukshubi pratyago vairagyam palgu katyate. We enter into this world, and there's stuff. There's objects, there's persons, there's opportunities for becoming the independent enjoyer of those things. And if one just rejects those things, it's incomplete. Palgo vairagya, false renunciation. And then the standard of bhakti permits or facilitates complete renunciation. And complete renunciation, accepting residence in a house, maybe that's not renounced, but if it's done in the spirit of devotion to Krishna, then here's how it's done. Rupa Goswami's teaching. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjitaha nirbanda Krishna sambande yuktam vairagya uchite. The phrase that's often spoken of is yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya. Vairagya means detachment, and yukta means engaging in things, stuff, and society, and homes, and stuff, with detachment. It's puzzling. I certainly can recall reading chapter 3 Bhagavad Gita, and notionally it's one thing, but really to live one's life where you work with detachment, it's puzzling if you work with attachment. I'm detached from the fruits and results, the fruits of my work. Then it sounds like I don't care. And if you don't care, you're sloppy. You're not attentive to detail, and it's like, I don't care. I'm just working without attachment. But that's not what it means. That's a definition by negation kind of meaning. That's this false renunciation, just giving things up. It's giving up the attachment to those things, working without attachment to those things. The secret, the mystery, is for whom are you doing something? It's bhakti, it's working with love and devotion. Here's a little simple example. Prabhupada would say, the impersonalist, if someone extends money, just by reflex, their hand goes behind their back. They can't touch money. And the Vaishnava, their hand is extended. But not out of greed, but here is something that can be used in Krishna's service. There's not an eagerness, let me get my hands on some money, nor is there the rejection of money, or say gold, or something of value, a house. Oh, I'm this detached person, so I don't care. But the opposite is true for a devotee. The devotee cares in the mood of detachment, which is it's a puzzle. The clue is anasaktasya vishayan. And anasaktasya is without attachment, and vishaya means sense enjoyment, without attachment to sense enjoyment. So here's a house. Or whatever it is that somebody thinks in this world is something nice. So Sanjaya has a liking. He has a gift that Krishna's given him for strumming on his guitar and plays it very nicely and sings very nicely, and he likes. And he offers that to Krishna. And the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra is, the essence is not the musicality of it, but the musicality enhances the listening to the singing of Krishna's name. Some years ago in New York, there was a family from Peru, and regularly would visit their home. The whole family became devotees. Grandma and mom and dad and all the kids and the cousins and the kind of extended family thing from Peru came to America, and they all lived together under the same roof. And they all had some training and some interest in the culture of Peru and the music of Peruvian culture. And so when we went to their home, Murali Krishna was the singer. He played harmonium. And then they, each time we went there, they had their opportunity to sing Hare Krishna, but they used Peruvian Incan ancient instruments. A lute, something that looked like, I don't know how to say how it looked like. Looked like a sandwich. with different places that you would blow on, and then they would have different lengths and different sizes, so it would make different sounds, and then they had little things you could put your fingers on, open some holes and close some holes, and you would get different sounds. I knew how to play that one. One knew how to play that. It sounded really nice. And then another instrument, that stringed instrument, and one you plucked, one you bowed, and then you put all of them together, and it was just, the music was very charming. And then they had traditional Inca Indian melodies, just like, there's a certain melody that Sanjaya was playing. And then the teenage girl, she had a very nice singing voice, and so they played, and everyone listened, and then she sang. And then everyone responded. Of course, the one playing the lute couldn't respond, but it was really nice. You could feel something. A traditional music of some culture has some potency. It's not transcendental, but it carries some potency, and you add that to that, that the chanting of the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name is really moving. A similar experience in China. I have with me the flash drive from the Puri Yatra. So one of the little events at the Puri Yatra was the Chinese devotees, the 30-something devotees that were there, had 2.5 hours to do Chinese culture and Vedic culture, or Vaishnava culture. And so they divided it up into different segments, and one of the segments, for example, was one girl who never had any professional training, but just she liked to sing. She took a traditional Chinese melody that has a certain, kind of like raga, has a certain combination of notes, and it sounds very pleasing. So the background music with that melody, and then she sang. And then behind her were the choreography team, and with hand motions they were dancing, and then illustrating the song, the water, and different things. So I don't know Chinese. It was in Chinese, but you could get an idea just from the mood and the hand motions and their dancing. It was very charming. and on and on and on. Examples. I'll give one more. My thoughts are going to... There was an ISKCON 50 celebration in Beijing. The police found out about it. And they came. But, you know, there's a rule. You can't have above a certain number of people gathered together, or you have to inform the police that you're going to have a gathering more than a certain number of people, because they don't want uprisings against the government. So a gathering of more than a certain number of people, they want to know about it. As they're just so. But one of the presentations was by a teenage girl, and she had some younger girls behind her. They were the choreography team, and she sang a song about Prabhupada. And I only knew what the song was when she would say, you know, Prabhupada, you know, and then would gesture to his picture, and you know the hand gesture she was making, and in the background was somebody with a little box that had some traditional Chinese melody, and she sang and the girls danced, and I was crying. It was just like so moving. So taking that which is part of who you are, even in the material sense, your culture, a grahastha, engaging his family in moving into a house and dedicating the house to the service of Krishna and associating with the devotees of Krishna in the house and inviting and so on. There's the material side, but they connect the material side to the spiritual side. And this is our way of bhakti. Provided the unmixed is anasaktasya vishayan, without attachment to enjoyment of the senses. Now there's some enjoyment to teenage girls singing this very sweet melody, or etc., etc. The Peruvian devotees from the mountain area of Peru and playing their traditional melody with traditional musical instruments and singing the Hare Krishna mantra. There's a certain connectivity to the body and the culture from which the body was born into, and so that there's that resonance. But the connection to Krishna part lifts it to a higher place, to Krishna consciousness. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjitaha. One of the most interesting parts of that verse is yatarham, which Prabhupada has translated as according to suitability. What does that mean? What's suitable for one may not be suitable for another, may not be suitable for another. What's suitable for the other may not be suitable for the one. So, someone may be very happy being in the palace, someone, and you know, like Sudama, Brahman, living in a little hut and having next to nothing, living in a palace, to him it was the same. His wife had, it's described by our acharyas, his wife had a similar nature to him. She liked that degree of simplicity. She wasn't like, oh, terrible, get on, get a job and make some more money because I want stuff. She was happy. She was peaceful with the level of austerity they were experiencing, or level of simplicity. But she was concerned about the welfare of her husband, and so then that was satisfied by Krishna. But it's said that even after the palace came, he still lived his life the same way. He slept on the floor, and he wasn't interested in sense gratification. I tell a little Prabhupada story. Shared it many times, but it was very meaningful. There was a period of time when I was involved in distributing books in the airport with what was called then the airport party. There was the Radha Damodar party, and they had buses. And then the bus, the airport party, joined the Radha Damodar party. So it was like, whew, powerful. So every year, for the Gaur Purnima festival, the devotees went together, as many as could go, got their visas, got on an Air India flight and paid less because we did a chartered flight, and flew to Calcutta and then went to Mayapur. So Prabhupada agreed to have a session in his little quarters just for the Radha Damodar party. So we were all gathered in the room at the appropriate time. Prabhupada's very simple room. The acharya for this worldwide organization was a really simple room right next door, immediately adjacent. There's a connecting door between the two. And then so he came out and sat down. So everyone paid their obeisances, and very ceremoniously and ostentatiously, Tamal Krishna Maharaj put a stack of $100 bills about that tall right on the corner of Prabhupada's desk and said, "Prabhupada, this is for you, from the Radha Damodar bus party." I was seated where you're seated, that close to Prabhupada, because the room was a small room and was packed. So I was right at the corner of the desk, and there's a stack of bills, and then there's Prabhupada from where the vantage point where I was sitting. And I was watching to see how Prabhupada would relate to the stack of $100 bills. And he made no mention of it. His eyes didn't even go there. He was speaking different things. And at some time he got up. And immediately he turned to his secretary and told him what to do with the stack of $100 bills. There was some printing cost that needed to be met, and see that it gets takes care of that printing. And then he was about to walk out of the room, and he turned around and said with a smile, "And can I now have some honey with my meals?" And then left. Like, a little sense gratification. It was a joke. Now I have this, at least can I get a little bit of honey now? No interest in enjoyment of the senses. Everything is meant for the service of Krishna. And it can be $100 bills, and it can be music, and it can be a house, and it can be whatever it can be. And each of us, culturally and personally, we have what is suitable for us. We have our upbringing, we have our nature. We're not impersonalists. We're not saying you should deny your nature. We live our lives according to our nature anyway. That's right, Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, you're Kshatriya. You couldn't, karma sannyasa is not for you. Giving up your work is not, you don't have that adhikar, you don't have that qualification. You have a qualification of a Kshatriya, you should engage that in service to Krishna. Each of us have our nature. We must engage our nature according to what is pleasing to Krishna. Just today, I had a conversation with an 18-year-old young man from Chicago suburbs, bright young man, finished his high school education a semester early and was accepted to college and was off to college in the month of January. And then something happened. He got notice from the army that they had accepted his application to become part of the army. And I didn't know that that was going on. He's really liked Bhagavad Gita. And he shared how he got interested in Bhagavad Gita. He was interested in understanding European spirituality pre-Christian. Like, what was going on before Christianity and Islam started to happen? What was the spirituality of the time? And then he started finding out that it's very, very similar to the spirituality of India. We didn't understand why that was so. There's a reason why it was so. But he started seeing some similarities. And so he started taking an interest in Vedic texts. And he found online an opportunity to read Bhagavad Gita. So he started reading Bhagavad Gita as it is online. And then he thought, you know, he read he needed a teacher from Bhagavad Gita. So he went, he found out where there's a nearby, and he lives in Naperville, and he went to the Hare Krishna temple. And then he met some devotees, and they've been helping him navigate his way through the complexities of growing up in America as a teenager. And now he's off to the army. He explained it's in his family, on his mother's side, a whole like generations have been involved in military service. And he has that, he's not a warrior, but he likes nature and he likes outdoors and he likes, you know, physical activity, and it helps his mind become peaceful. And he's looking for God, and it's very clear that, you know, military today isn't what military Bhagavad Gita was about. He's very clear, very clear person, but it's his nature. And so how to any advice from me? He wants to learn about, anyway, so we discussed. There are four natural divisions of occupation in this world created by Krishna, so he's got one of them. He has a deep interest in spirituality, an extraordinary interest, not superficial at all, and he's learning how to engage all of that in service to Krishna. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yataram, according to suitability, Upayunjitaha. You accept things and engage them without sense gratification in service to Krishna. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yataram Upayunjitaha. Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya. There's that phrase. Yukta Vairagya Uchite. What is real renunciation? This is chapter 5 Bhagavad Gita. What is real renunciation is yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. That's detached. Linking oneself with the Supreme. That's yoga. And we're not impersonalists. We don't say no. We say for Krishna only. So when going forward thoughtfully, mindfully, in the path of life, things can be accepted, things should be accepted, according to suitability, provided they are not indulged in the mood of sense gratification. Radha made some nice prasadam for the Northeastern program on Monday. And your father was very happy to announce that the sweets were made by Radha. And she was really happy that people were taking the prasadam that she had made. First time, right? First time. So that says something, you know, a propensity. I'm guessing somebody didn't twist your arm and say, can you do it, can you do it, can you do it? But you just wanted to do it, right? So propensity comes out. We each have our nature. So the art of work is how to do those things that are our nature in a mood that's for Krishna service. There's a risk on this side, and there's a risk on that side. The risk on one side is you accept things, and next thing you know, you're engaging in those things in the mood of sense gratification. And then the other side is you give things up, but they're in relation to Krishna, they're, you don't really have any business giving them up. So you have to stay in the middle of the road. Know who you are, know what your nature is, and accept things and engage those things in service to Krishna. And living one's life that way, one can be Krishna conscious and give Krishna consciousness. You know, each of us have that same opportunity because we're different in different ways, and there's lots of opportunity. There's lack of Krishna consciousness and lots of opportunity for Krishna consciousness. But it's an important principle to understand and then internalize and live by. Rupa Goswami ki jai. Any discussion? Comments? You got something? No? Okay.
There's a question.
They want you to have a question, whether you have one or not.
I was asking whether he wants to ask the question publicly or privately.
Okay. Sanjaya.
No, I can ask.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Prabhuji, Maharaj, sorry. I expand on this. One of our friends gave us a gift of Radha Krishna deities from Jaipur, India.
Uh-huh.
So we kept it on our altar and we started worshipping it. It's the way we know in our Indian culture or whatever tradition our family has, not like that. That time we were not...
Practice.
So last year when my son goes to Bhagavad Gita class in ISKCON, he started going. So we come across with the ISKCON devotees and we also started attending all the classes. So that time we realized that worshipping Radha Krishna deity is highly, this is something not everybody should do this and so I don't know what to do now. We still kept it in our altar and we are worshipping the way we are doing it. So I just asked Prabhuji once, what I should do with this. Should I take it out? Or I don't know what to do. Just give your advice on this.
What's your sense? A lot depends on faith. The answer to this type of question depends upon an individual's faith. This is that statement is the Hari Bhakti Vilas statement. So there's technical and there's faith. So there's two options, or, you know, variations on the theme of two options. One is you find somebody who you feel is qualified to worship until you're ready and qualified, and then you can resume worship. That's one option. And the other option is because it's Krishna's arrangement that you didn't go around, you know, shopping for Krishna, came to you. And your culture tells you worship Krishna. So you worship Krishna. And now there's the realization, whoops, I don't have the qualification to worship Krishna. So continue the worship. This is another option. Continue the worship and double down on becoming, you know, qualified, trained, and experienced how to. Now there's the procedure, and then there's the consciousness behind the procedure. But at least you can learn the procedure that's standard, because what people do over here and what people do that's standard may not be the same. Over the generations and generations, it may not be what the scriptures say it should be. So learn the procedure. And this is an option. And focus on the internal qualification to properly worship. And there's many different limbs of the internal qualification part. So which is more suited, or variations on the theme of those two?
The second one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
True.
What part of India did you grow up in?
South India, Bangalore.
Bangalore, okay. And do you have an idea why Radha Krishna from Jaipur ended up in your home?
Yeah.
You're from Bangalore?
This happened, I was, before coming here last year, I was in Abu Dhabi in UAE. Our neighbor, they are from Jaipur. And they worship Krishna.
So it's them.
It's them.
And they have affection for you, and they saw you as devotional, so they gave, according to their culture,
yes.
Radha Krishna,
yes.
Gifted to you because you're a spiritual family.
Yeah.
Like that?
Like that, yes.
Kind of, okay.
And I asked some other devotees, they said, keep it till you get totally purified or got initiated, that time you start worshipping it up, till that time you can keep it inside. Don't keep it in the altar. Some said, return it back to the one who gave it to you. And some said, put it something in the river or something like this. There are so many versions I heard in there.
Yeah.
We didn't took any step, we just kept it the way it is.
There is a seminar that's being scheduled, and I forget the dates. Oh, it's right after the Gita Nagari Memorial Weekend retreat. In Gita Nagari, the deity worship minister is going to do a 2-week, I think it is, or some number of 10 days, something, some number of days, seminar on deity worship. It's going to be videoed, and the global minister, the North American minister, and their number one student, recent graduate, will be there. But most likely they'll make videos of it, and it'll cover A to Z with, you know, what are some of the procedures that you should be tuned into. And I'm sure they'll do some things, you know, practice proper dressing and things that you're not going to really pick up on a video. Giant, you remind me, and I'll send you the link, and you can make it available, and you can consider. I have no idea what your schedule's like, and you know that's a lot of days. But the deity worship minister forwarded to me that, you know, the information, saying, you know, make it available to people. So I'm saluting to the chief and see. Okay.
I have a question about Mayapur.
Mayapur?
Yeah. So really? Last year I went to Mayapur for Gorpurni.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I stayed 2 weeks.
Too many people.
It was very crowded.
So, your question.
So, and I missed you by like 5 days.
Okay.
So on the one side, I mean, I like Mayapur very much. It's nice and quiet, and there is still simplicity there. But then...
Depends on where you are in Mayapur.
But then, on the other side of the temple, I saw all the apartment buildings. Huge. And so, what is the goal? What is the future of
the city? The goal, that there's a master. Prabhupada wanted a city, a model city. So a city means apartments and, you know, buildings, not just huts. A city, not just a village, a city. And so there's a master plan group consulting with a formal master plan company in Calcutta. They come, you know, periodically and help us build the master plan, this and that and the other. And so it's not just hodgepodge, because some of the things that were done down the street, it's awful. Awful. Because there wasn't any standard. And it was, you know, driven by greed, etc. It was like awful. So they don't want any more of that. So they want it done, you know, Vastu and this and that, and with a plan, because people, when this temple of Vedic plan, besides there's already 15,000 people, there's something like that, 15,000 devotees heading towards 50. There's going to be a lot of people coming there, and a lot of service to do to take care of the people that are coming there, and then a lot of people that want to live there because of the education and because of, you know, everything that's there for children, for adults, for families, for sannyasis, teachers, this training, that training, the other training. So the vision is a city that there are sections that will exemplify, you know, living off the land. Not just like a little patch, a little acre or so. Whole sections. Did you visit the Gurukul? They have grass huts. And, you know, they were gifted some number of acres, some 15 acres or whatever it is, and it's like what goes, and it's boys in traditional education model, where they have the four varnas, and they live very simply, and they have teachers that live with the students, and it's, you know, it's really well organized. So that's a model of traditional Vedic life in a Vedic school. And then, but there's going to be a zillion tourists, and it has, you know, the providing meals for them, and you have to have a place to accommodate the people that prepare the meals for them, and the kitchens, and the serving, and the thising, and the thatting, and the vegetables, and cutting, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And recycling, you know, the water, the whole thing, water, sewage, you know, the real practical stuff. Lighting, bringing boats from Calcutta, so they can have a, it's very, very involved with the city that has as its, one of its main functions is education, and coming to the temple of Vedic Planetarium, teaching, you know, the Vedas teach about the cosmos, the structure of the universe, as well as how to live your life, the, you know, the micro and the macro. So there's texts that are written that describe what's the vision in different sections of that vision. If you're interested, you can get some of those things. Doing it is one thing. I mean, doing it is another thing. Having a conception. So Prabhupada gave an outline, and then devotees are working hard to try to figure out how to do what Prabhupada said. So that's the direction, is knowing what he said, trying to understand what he meant when he said this and that, and then creating it in real time. There, some distance away from the main, the core master plan area, they're buying land for the cows and for others that want to live in grass huts, and you know, so that's part of Mayapur, and it's over there, and then there's the city. And 15,000 is not a big city. It's not like Shanghai.
I was the only place to that we could find rooms was actually one room. It was a Gopinath temple. So I would go on the top, on the roof, to chant. So I saw other
panorama, yeah.
And small fields. And then when I saw all the buildings that are growing, my question was, how where will the agriculture go? How is it going?
Generally speaking, in a city, there's not a lot of agriculture. The agriculture is in the areas outside the city. And so, thoughtfully, they have purchased tracts of land that are for that purpose only. But they're not in the city, they're on the perimeters of the city. But, you know, the perimeter of the city is where the agricultural land is, and it's zoned agriculture, so to speak, not to be used for further land development. It's not a government. They can't, like, legislate all that stuff. Therefore, they have to buy the land and dedicate it consciously. And, you know, so on the one hand, but on the other hand, they want to bring people from all over the world, literally, to experience Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. At the same time, they want to showcase what, oh, it's the balance of those things. And cows. Land for agriculture, land for cows, Krishna Gauraksha, so that the marketplaces for people that produce things, handcrafts, all those things, it's part of the picture. Urban planning.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, like, when you can't, like, finish off, like, prasadam, and you really don't want to waste it, but you know if you have it, like, it's not going to be okay for you, so what do you do?
Well, there's different things you can do, but a good thing to do is before you start eating, you look at what's on your plate. And you say, I'm going to put something over there, and I'll eat what's remaining on the plate, and then if I'm still hungry, I can take something, but I'm not, you know, don't have to throw it away. That's a nice thing that many devotees do. Now, the servers may want to put more stuff on your plate. But you just, you know, say, oh, thank you. That's before you begin. Then you can always add and take some more, but they don't have that dilemma. Then it also minimizes or somewhat reduces the tendency to overeat. You have a tendency to overeat? No. Okay. Tendency to undereat? Okay. So there's something on your plate. Before you begin, take some things off the plate that you think I may not be able to take those things. Then it's not unclean because it's just prasadam. But then once it's on your plate, then you start eating. Comes the dilemma. Yes? Tulia, yes?
Maharaj, I wanted to ask about this in serving Krishna, like using our propensities. So there's always a chance of over-endeavoring, especially the things that we like to do. So I want to hear some cautions and like what differentiates between service versus over-endeavoring.
It's a judgment call. I mean, a principle over-endeavor is who is at the center. And the doership mentality is mode of passion, and that's where you start to over-endeavor. And then the for who it's being done disappears, and the sadhana, core sadhana elements start to get pinched because you're over-endeavoring towards something or something or something. One can err the other direction, but specifically in that direction, those two elements. Your core sadhana isn't being compromised. And you're staying focused with who this is being done for. It's similar to the discussion we had in this morning class. Yes? When you look at which?
My plate, my prasadam plate.
Your prasadam plate.
And then I see all these things in my plate. I usually take out all the normal food or the good food, and I leave like the junk food and all that. So what does it do?
You eat the junk food instead of the good food.
Yeah. So what does it do to like at least, you know, I don't like junk food, but I mean normal food, but what is basically a tip to at least try to eat it or eat more of it?
How to go away from the junk food and towards the good ones.
Yeah.
That's what you're asking? How about some tips or some steps? Well, where did the junk food come from to begin with?
Maharaj, like she removes the vegetables out of, like, you know, even if you make noodles or something, pasta. So the vegetables are out and she's only eating carbohydrate, just the wheat or the flour or portion of it, whatever.
Or snacky items, those which are fried items.
So no vegetables.
It's a very tough choice.
I'm pausing because I can't draw upon personal experience with this one. Meaning, you know, I don't have that problem. In working towards what you want to work towards, there's your likes and dislikes. That's one thing. And that's what your question is framed in. I like this and I don't so much like the other. Then there's another consideration that really helps, and that is what's good for you. So the like and dislike, that's more the mode of passion, and what's good for you is more the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, just a principle with eating is some variety, some balance between some of this and some of that and some of the other. And I, you know, some of this and some of that and some of the other, that's good for me. It's long term, you know, because the body hopefully will be around for a while. And, you know, it'll help make the body healthy, and then you'll be able to function and do stuff better if you have good health. And that which makes the body healthy is variety. And you take more of this and less of that, or not much at all of that and a lot of this, it's imbalance. So towards, as you grow, it doesn't lead to good health. Not good for you. So then it's a mode of goodness decision. Let me do that which is going to be good for me. And, you know, in a holistic picture, there's the body, but then there's me. You know, the body is part of, it carries me around. So it's important to take care of it. What a good this kind of reasoning. And so more thoughtful than I like, I don't like. When I was growing up, there was this thing, kind of saying at the time, about eat your spinach. Now, spinach isn't yummy, but it's a part of something that's good for you, and therefore eat your spinach. So I learned that one when I was a kid. I ate spinach not because I liked it, or didn't not eat it because I didn't like it. I just ate it because it's good for me.
You like spinach.
Fine. And then, so those other things, variety is also, from food, this is a dietitian will say, even people that aren't Hare Krishna people, you know, food from different categories is good for health. If you want good health, take food from different categories. Some of this and some of that, not just, you know, an inordinate amount of this and hardly anything of that. That's not a good diet. You won't be healthy. You'll be a dull person. Maybe a sick person. Sick and dull, that's not yummy. So, long term. So, educate yourself. Learn about it. Just, you know, it's there for a reason. I didn't necessarily understand what it was about. I kind of liked spinach too. I didn't have a problem with spinach, but it was a thing of when I was growing up, which meant, you know, eat things not because they're yummy, eat things because it's good for you. Mode of goodness. You like getting up in the morning? Be honest. I didn't thought so. But you know, it's good for you. Just like our discussion this morning about staying up late at night. Reading Ramayana, that's good for you. And taking rest early and getting up early, that's good for you. But you like to do this one, they don't like to do that one. Or if that one is it compromised, then you do this one and the heck with the other one. That's imbalanced life. But be a balanced person. That's mode of goodness. Regulation. Mode of goodness. You're a little stubborn too, huh? So that's another way. It's just learn the hard way. You get dull and you get sick. You guess that, I guess I should eat some from varieties of things. So that's learning the hard way. That's not good. Mode of goodness. Regulation, variety in your diet. So by education you'll learn. This is a good diet. This regulation is good. You heard at Northeastern this early to bed, early to rise. One of the persons in the audience was a girl from China, and she smiled when I said, it's even in China. It's not like just an American thing or a European-American thing. It's truth. Early to bed and early to rise. And early to rise. But to do that, it is early to bed.
I also tried to go to Mangala Arati, just tried to go every day, but you know, sometimes I miss the alarm. Like, I have this alarm, it usually wakes me up, but sometimes, you know, I miss it.
Yeah. Well, regulation. Regulation helps one come to a spontaneous stage of bhakti, right? But if you can't do the regulation, how are you going to become a spontaneous bhakta? And then, after spontaneous devotion, love of God, you got to do the regulation part. Healthy, wealthy, and wise. Maybe the wealthy part isn't a big deal, but healthy, for some people it's a big deal. Healthy, wealthy, and wise. Wealthy means, you know, the work that you do, it bears fruit. Because you're in a good place. And it helps you be in a good place. Early to bed, early to rise. It's just a fact. All over the world, since, you know, centuries and centuries. It's a truth. Then you will have less struggle with, I don't like this and I want that. Okay. Anybody else? You have something? No. Yes.
So, if for some proximity reason, like by worshipping temple or by worshipping deities at the temple.
You asked a similar question last time we were together. No? No? Okay. Both are nice. And practicality says worship primarily at home because it's so far to get to the temple. And there is something special at the temple, and that's, you know, it's a place where kirtan has been going on for decades. It's a sanctified place. And Radha Gopi Pallava, very, very special deities. So that's nice. And practicality says primarily worship at home. And be eager, and when you go, it's like really nice. That's what this 18-year-old person said to me today. We had a little conference call. The person's guiding him, and he said that the few times that there's something very special about this mantra. He's new. He's 18. Hasn't had much exposure, but he said the few times I've been to the temple, one evening I went, there was a 12-hour kirtan, and it was, he said, I've only had one other experience like that in my life, but it was, you know, I just felt so connected to God. So you can replicate that in your home, fantastic. And otherwise, you do what's practical. You have what you can do at your home. And then, from time to time, you come to the temple. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.